welcome to this Christmas edition of In Your Company, the fortnightly business show on Cambridge 105, presented by me, Sam Davis. In this month's show, we talk to three organisations which play a big part in creating the Cambridge Christmas experience. And we start with Mike Wiseman, the chair of the City Centre's Business Improvement District. The Christmas shopping season is critical for many traders, and part of Cambridge BID's mission is to promote the city as an attractive destination for residents and tourists alike. Mike started by explaining to me the origins of the project back in 2012.
Cambridge BID is a collaboration of 1,100 businesses working together to promote and improve the city centre. The forerunner of it was a group called Love Cambridge. Love Cambridge was set up outside of the immediate City Council's auspices, but with their blessing, was 40% funded from the City and County Councils, and then 60% from a relatively limited number of large businesses. However, the funding from the local authorities was not a statutory requirement. We had the opportunity of some funding from the European Regional Development Fund, which enabled us to look at creating a business improvement district in the middle of Cambridge. We had a task force that put together a business plan. We then went out to the 1,100 businesses that are within the boundaries that we set for the bid and asked them, would they support us and support us financially? Yes or no, and I'm pleased to say that in October-November 2012 we got a majority from the businesses and we set up the bid, which came into being in April 2013.
That explains how it's funded. It's funded by local traders paying into a kitty, and you then have some stated objectives, which we'll talk about in a minute,
say it's not just traders, it's any business within the boundaries of the bid area that pays business rates.
So what roughly is the annual budget that BID has to work with?
We collect from businesses through the 1% levy in the region of £750,000. So that is augmented by some voluntary contributions from some of the larger property owners, such as the three shopping centres and the county council, who had previously financed it, also put some money.
How have you chosen your priorities for how that money gets spent?
We did a survey of businesses under the auspices of the task force to find out what issues it was that particularly concerned businesses and what it was that they would like to see an improvements on, so that they could see an increase in their business. We're split into four areas. One is pride and promotion. That, as it says, is about promoting Cambridge. We've done that in a number of different ways. We have welcoming and vibrant. That is some specific areas there. One is that we decided to set up a team of city ambassadors. You may well have seen them walking around the streets
with their bowler hats on.
Distinctive bowler hats, which was intentional to make sure they stood out from the crowd, so to speak. We have six ambassadors that work 7 days a week to help guide people around Cambridge. They also have a secondary role, which is to act as our contact with businesses. Another one of our areas is safe and clean, and that's about two parts there. CANBAC, the Cambridge Business Against Crime, and we support and pay the membership fees for any business within the bid area. And we also work supporting the taxi marshals and the street pastors that are really important, particularly this time of the year. And also part of the Safe and Clean is a rapid response team. We've gone around Cambridge giving deep cleans to a number of key areas, particularly in what we call the high impact areas. And in the new year, we will be delivering a service of programmed cleaning of streets, and in particularly providing a morning after the night before, because unfortunately some businesses do come across things that they would rather not see.
Absolutely, I'm sure they do.
And then finally, we have a business support where we have a cost saving initiative, and we've worked with a consultant, Meerkat, who go out and talk with businesses, examine some of their bills, you know, particularly in power, telephones, that type of thing, to see whether they can suggest alternative providers for that service, and we pay the actual cost for Meerkat to go out and do that.
From what you've said there, it's an extraordinarily broad range of approaches to promoting and supporting Cambridge business, which is really great to hear. It sounds like there's a real mix of responsibilities which kind of cross boundaries. So, for example, the street cleaning one, which you mentioned, presumably in an era when council funding was slightly easier, that would have been covered by the council.
No, we were actually very careful. We set some service level agreements with the city council before we undertook going the bid, and the bid provides additionality.
Okay.
So what we do is doing something over and above it.
So what's the response from traders and visitors been to what you're doing?
I think it's a very positive response. I mean, like all businesses, not everybody is a fan of it because it does cost them a 1% levy on their business rates. But it's quite easy for them to get that back, particularly on things like the cost-saving initiative. They can easily get back from adopting some of the suggestions from Meerkats. They can recover the cost and probably get more back.
And do you have ways of measuring the impact of what you're doing? I mean, is success defined by any particular metrics for you?
Yes, you know, we are, and we're getting better at it, and we've got further to go, but we do monitor footfall across the city. Historically, the shopping centres have been very good at counting how many people go in and out of there. We've had a camera outside Marks and Spencer's for a number of years, which shows a pattern, and we are, in the next few weeks, adding another 4 cameras around the city, which will give us a much better understanding of how pedestrians or the numbers that flow in places like King's Parade, round by the Round Church, across from between Fitzroy Street and the Grafton, and across to the city centre and on Regent Street. We also collect from the City Council car parking statistics and from the County Council park and ride statistics. And we are putting those now together next year in a report that will go out on a monthly basis to businesses.
I was going to ask about BID's contribution to Christmas in Cambridge, but we've covered several aspects of that already.
Yes, I can add to that. So last year we completely replaced all the Christmas lights across the city with low energy LED lighting as against the old fashioned filament lighting. We added a number of additional schemes, so there's some 26 schemes now across the city centre. Hopefully people will find that there's a much better sense of Christmas. We were also looking after the launch in late November of Christmas in Cambridge.
The big switch on.
The big switch on, yes. So that is something that falls under our organisation. We've also incidentally helped sponsor the ice rink that's on Parker's Peace. That wasn't around last year, and this year we're really pleased to see it back again. It adds some vibrancy and gives people another reason to come to Cambridge.
And one of the, I think, relatively small but quite charming things you're doing is running this Christmas Windows campaign as well, encouraging shopkeepers to come up with.
In particular, for the Small Business Saturday, we're very conscious that Cambridge is fortunate. It has a vast range of independent shops and businesses, and we need to promote them.
That's already helpful in terms of capturing where we are this year. Now, presumably a question about what plans, if any, you have to expand your area of coverage or your activities is redundant because you are constrained to what you covered in your 5-year proposal.
Yes, but one of the things that we undertook with the City Council was that if any other areas in Cambridge wanted to look at setting up a bid, because you know, several towns and cities have got a number, you know, say somewhere like Birmingham, it's got a multi number of bids, and each bid has its own business plan, and they would have to be different. We talked quite a bit with the City Council about the boundaries. There was a suggestion that we should include Mill Road in the area, but the dynamics of Mill Road are very different to the dynamics in the city centre, and what would work for the city centre wouldn't necessarily work in Mill Road. But we've said that if Mill Road, per se, wanted to set up a bid, which is quite possible, then we would help them go through the process.
Okay.
And likewise, though it's quite a small area, Mitcham's Corner and Chesterton Road, the City Council has recently appointed a coordinator to help develop that area. It's not impossible that in future years they would look to have a bid.
Do you get frustrated by the fact that you can't change some of the aspects of Cambridge infrastructure that make it rather more frustrating than one might hope it would be?
I would say the word is challenging. Yes, we would all like to have a wand to solve some of the transport issues that beset Cambridge, but many towns, you know, historic towns and cities across the UK face similar challenges. We do work pretty closely with the City Council. We're always challenging them on their high level of car parking charges, and ask them to look at other ways that they can perhaps increase their income other than putting up the charges every year. We are very supportive of the park and ride sites that surround Cambridge. It's a vital part of the transport system. What we're not very supportive of is the way that the County Council introduced the £1 charge. We understand why they needed the £1 charge, and whilst we weren't in agreement with it, it's a fait accompli, it's there. What we're really critical of is the way that the system was
designed. The infamous machines.
Yes, but interestingly, and the bid works as a pressure group representing our businesses, we've worked very closely with the County Council. Before I came to meet you today, I actually stopped off at Trumpington to see what was going on with the queues there. This was 11 o'clock on a weekday morning, and I'm pleased to say that there was virtually no queues there. The County Council have, over the Christmas period, got some people up there to help people that are going through the process. And that was working really well. I would encourage people that come into Cambridge, even if it's only occasionally, to go online and register your car. I have a 91 and 94 year old in-laws, and they I've now put them online, and they have no problems in using it. So that is the way really to have a very easy experience. And I think once people have used the machines once, that they will be reassured that it is not as bad as people have made out.
Okay, well, I'll take your word.
It has been damaging, though, to the image of Cambridge, because the park and ride is a superb service. And once people have used it once, many of them never return in any other way.
All right, well, we will battle on with the machines at the park and ride, come into town, enjoy the lights, enjoy the Christmas atmosphere, and hopefully appreciate what BID has done to make that all a more rewarding and enjoyable experience. Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you, Sam.
This is In Your Company on Cambridge 105 with me, Sam Davis. Now, retail is a big part of Christmas in the city, but it's not the whole story. Many visitors want to augment their shopping trip with some leisure activities. One of the city's most popular destinations is the North Pole Ice Rink on Parker's Piece. The Icebox, the company which runs the rink, is based in London and has developed a plethora of ice-based products. I called Managing Director Richard Elmer and asked him about how the ice rinks fit into the company's overall strategy.
There's a number of brands that we have going for the Icebox. So under Icebox Entertainment, we have the Ice Rinks, which is a what everyone sees there on Parker's Piece. But that whole event is ours. We organise the whole funfair side of it and the food market side of it as well. And we've got other rinks and sites around the UK that we operate at this time of year as well. We then have the main brand, which is the Icebox. Under that brand, we operate a bag ice delivery service, mainly in central London, but we do go outside of London and all over the UK when our clients need be, and that's to caterers and event companies and pubs, clubs and restaurants when they have big functions or if their ice machine breaks down. So in the midst of summer, we can get up around 10 tonne of ice a day that we deliver in and around London. And then on the back of the ice box as well, we've also got the ice sculptures that we do. Now, that can be anything from a flower frozen into a 30-centimetre square bit of ice for a wedding, or it can be, we've done life-size houses in Germany for ING Bank. We've done life-size cars for car launches, Ford Focus and Audi TT. So it's anything really, logos, guerrilla marketing, product launches, all that kind of thing comes on the ice sculpture side of it. Now, along with the ice sculptures, I've also developed a couple of other brands for online, because we mainly deliver throughout London, but I was having a bit of a challenge to get outside London with the delivery costs sort of adding up more than what the ice sculpture was worth. So I've developed some specialised installation where I can deliver my ice sculptures anywhere in the UK the next day via FedEx. So we're really tapped into the sort of B2C client there, along with a few other ranges of products that sort of complement the ice sculptures.
And one of the things I've read that Icebox get up to is dispatching vodka luges. Is that proving a good seller at this time of year?
Yeah, it is. That's the one that I was talking about online. So originally the Icebox introduced the vodka luge into the UK market back in the 90s, you know, mainly around London, and we did a few here, there, around the UK. But the vodka luge, which is the two online ones, are very popular because we're getting out to sort of the retail client, we call it now. We're very much doing a lot of marketing and a lot of focus on getting to the mother and father that are throwing a birthday party for their 18th, you know, the daughter's or the son's 18th or 21st birthday party. But we do a lot of 30th and 40th and 50th and all that kind of thing. So it is proving to be very popular. I mean, they've been around for many years, but it's amazing how many people aren't aware of them. But I mean, I'm sure that's like any product throughout the UK.
And I gather that you've also introduced a team building day dimension to the ice carving activity. How does that work?
Yeah, we have another brand, and that's called Ice Breakers. It's a great way to break the ice, we call it. So that's very popular. We send one of our carvers out on that job with our project managers, and just sort of next week alone, I think we had 7.
How did you get into this line of business? Because this is not the kind of career that a careers teacher would traditionally point someone at and say, that's for you, my son.
You can obviously tell by my accent, I'm from the southern part of the hemisphere where ice is not in abundance. So I joined the founder, Philip Hughes, about 10, 11 years ago, and we've just progressed on from there. I came over to the UK on a working holiday, and 11 years later, I'm still here.
Interesting to hear that you were talking about some of the different countries you've managed to take your company's offerings to. As you said, there's some pictures on your website of the ice house that you built in Germany, which are quite spectacular. And also putting ice features in really quite hostile environments like Dubai and Portugal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, We've worked in around 20 countries worldwide now. We've got quite a good reputation and quite a portfolio, which is getting to be unmatched around the world. So, you know, with all the hard work that we've done, our reputation is out there that we can deliver ice anywhere in the world. I mean, we've consulted on weddings in Canada, and we've delivered, you know, ice bars on private islands in the south of France. So, yeah, it's been very interesting.
And to, just to come back to, as you said, the sort of most visible symbol of your company's activities, which are the rinks around the country, how many do you set up every winter?
This winter we're doing 6, which is quite a handful on top of everything else that we are doing. So we've got one up in Liverpool, obviously Cambridge. We've got 3 in 4 in London. So it's something we got into ice rinks around 4 or 5 years ago. Basically, I was looking to diversify. When the recession came around, one of the first things that sort of goes from any event budget is the high-end products as such. When I say high-end, I mean the bolt-on products to parties, like the ice sculpture and the chocolate fountain. So on the event side of it and the private party side of it, that's what the category we fell into. So I had a bit of a look a few years ago on what would be the easiest transition for this company to expand what we did. And obviously ice is very specialised, so it was an easy sort of transition for us to get into that side of things. And because of the reputation that we have and the way that we deal with people and the way we treat our clients, I found that we're very much in demand and turning away contracts on the ice rink side of the business.
Well, on behalf of the citizens of Cambridge, can I thank you very much for bringing your product here? It's a big part of certainly many children and I think adults' Christmas experience, and hopefully you'll be back for years to come. Another popular and more permanent participant in the Cambridge leisure sector is The Junction, based on the leisure park at the corner of Hills Road and Cherry Hinton Road. Arts director Daniel Pitt took time out from rehearsals on the opening day of The Junction's festive show to explain the venue's origins and how they choose to celebrate Christmas.
So we're a performing arts centre with 3 spaces. There's J1, which is 25 years old in February next year. That's the old gig venue. That's used for club nights as well. We're sitting in our J2 building, which is about 9 years old, and has our 220-seat theatre in there, which is used for all kinds of things, music, comedy, theatre, family shows. And then J3 is our studio, which is can be a small theatre seating 100, but is more often used for workshops, learning and rehearsals.
This year's Christmas show, I've seen the flyer, and people can search it up on the Junction website. It's a version of Around the World in 80 Days.
Well, the arts theatre for us does the Panto in Cambridge, and so we aim to do a family-friendly Christmas theatre show. Last year was a production of inspired by Thumbelina, called Thumbelina's Great Big Adventure, which we produced, which is actually on tour this year. It's in Birmingham at the moment, and then going to Kendal as well. So stories people know or have heard of, but that fit our artistic remit as well, and provide an antidote to the Panto, something that's not... celebrity-laden, celebrity with a... It's a strong word, potentially, for the Cambridge one, but you might come here for a different reason.
I've brought my own children here to Christmas shows in the past when they've been younger, and the thing that's always struck me about them is you put on incredibly innovative and creative stagings. And certainly my experience with my children was that they really related to that, you know, as opposed to the kind of clichés of a panto.
Yeah, well, we try to make it match... Our artistic policy for theatre, or in general, is contemporary performance of all kinds. For theatre, that's often more innovative and less traditional. Around the World in 80 Days, the set is all... they travel around all the places that they need to for the story with the same set, remoulding it, applying different lighting, moving props and costumes from the side of the stage into the centre where there's a quite adaptable backdrop that they move around. And so the same kind of inventiveness is seen in this show as well. It's the same company, NIE, who made Hansel and Gretel in 2011, if you saw that.
I think that might have been the one we came to see, actually. How do you go about choosing a production, then?
We approached the company first. So last year it was a company called Dancing Brick, NIE, who are actually resident here. They're a permanent theatre company that has an office here. We work with them on certain shows, but not everything. But we know they make the kind of work that goes down really well with our audiences at Christmas. And so we approached them after the following on the success of the previous one, what would they like to make, talked about some options, and the Random Wednesday Days was the title that we thought would be a good show.
And I know the Junction is very keen on being rooted in the community. You do a lot of schools productions of your Christmas shows as well, don't you? Yeah. School-specific showings.
Yeah, so it's running for 4 weeks, two of which are just for schools. Opened this morning, 10:30 a.m. to a packed school's house. It seemed to go down really well, so I'm hoping that it's going to build and build over the next few weeks.
So what kind of attendance would you get over the whole Christmas period, do you think?
This year, hoping for between 4,000 and 6,000 people to come see it. We're a lot smaller theatre than the Arts Theatre is, and for school shows we only sell the downstairs of our theatre. We found it's worked for young children, it's better for them to be
it's more
all
immersive
downstairs
and
together, and so the capacity is only 160-ish for a performance, which in that space is quite an intimate, warm space, and the connection with the performers and the audience is, I think, quite an exciting one for kids to go to and have as maybe a formative experience of theatre.
And what sort of age group is this show aimed at?
It's with 6+. It's probably suitable for 4+. Nothing inappropriate for anybody.
And you also have what you describe as a relaxed performance just after Christmas, I think.
Yeah, so relaxed performances are increasingly common. They're particularly good for people with autism and Asperger's and things that may not be hugely comfortable in a blacked out theatre space when the conventions of keeping quiet and things are quite difficult for them. And also the same works for kids with, babies, parents with babies that might be screaming, would like to bring their other kids along to that. So we keep the house lights on. Silence isn't expected, and if you would like to know what the story is before, familiarise your children with the narrative and the characters and what the show will look like so they aren't expecting any surprises, then a visual storyline is available on the website in advance as well.
So this is a really big deal for you in a way. This is kind of the centrepiece of your year's activities,
I guess. It's the only time we do a long run of a show, because we are on an arts centre business model and programming model that comes with that. It's one-nighters, basically, of most events. Occasionally two, occasionally a bit more. But it's the only time you do a long run. And financially, that works out quite differently for us, because you can invest more in the show. And we commission this show. This one's co-produced by NIE themselves with us. But there's potential for significant income when there is over the run. And so everyone's... You can obviously work it out. People are being paid weekly rates rather than daily rates, and so it makes it more useful.
And I know the Junction is about 50% funded by the proceeds of what you put on, and then presumably 50% from grants.
It's less than 50%. I'm not certain of the current figure, but it's less than 50. But we receive regular funding from the Arts Council of England and City Council, and that the Arts Council money has been confirmed for the next 3 years as well, so we're lucky about that.
We've talked very much about the family-friendly side of what the Junction does. You mentioned J1 and the club nights. I guess the other high point of the festive season is New Year's Eve in J1.
Yes. So our White Noise Club is this year, the J1 club night, open till 6 a.m. And as well as being able to put on family shows, we do like... Well, I like working here partly because we have such a diverse range of audiences and programme. Rave next door, theatre show in this one, which is quite an unusual mix. And the only place in Cambridge that is open till 6 a.m, so serving a function in that way, I guess, as well.
Well, Danny, thank you very much for letting us in on the season ahead for you, and I wish you the best of luck with all your programming.
Thank you.
My thanks to Mike, Richard and Daniel for taking part in today's show, and indeed to all my interviewees this year. Now, we've almost reached the end of In Your Company's run on Cambridge 105, but I do hope you'll tune in to our hour-long review special on Saturday the 27th of December. Until then, Merry Christmas, thanks for listening, and goodbye.